you're here. Fellowship, sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you.
Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Friday, August 23rd, 2019. Exciting times to be alive. Let me launch right into some scripture that I'll talk about in just a few minutes. Reading from Luke chapter 17, beginning at verse 5, and I'll read through verse 10. The apostles said to the Lord, "Increase our faith." He replied, "If you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mulberry tree, 'Be uprooted and planted in the sea,' and it will obey you. Suppose one of you had a servant plowing or looking after the sheep. Would he say to the servant when he comes in from the fields, 'Come along now and sit down and eat'? Would he not rather say, 'Prepare my supper, get yourself ready, and wait on me while I eat and drink. After that, you may eat and drink.' Would he thank the servant because he did what he was told to do? So you also, when you have done everything you were told to do, should say, 'We are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty.'" Ah, a very interesting passage. And I'm going to be doing a reading out of a book that I've loved for many years. It's titled Autobiography of God, God Revealed in the Parables of Jesus by Lloyd John Ogilvie. And I'll set up that reading by a song by Matthew Ward titled This Is My Offering, as this unique passage and parable in Luke chapter 17 talks about these servants doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're just doing their job. And hopefully we'll all learn together. Speaking of learning together, you'll learn to appreciate some great quartet music tonight, some Southern Gospel arrangements, as the Allen Quartet and the nationally known The Old Paths Quartet will be at the East Lynn Park in East Lynn, Illinois. From 5 to 6 p.m., there'll be free hot dogs and snacks for all. And then come 6 p.m., the Allen Quartet will open up the evening. So invite a friend, bring along your lawn chair, and prepare for a great evening of Southern Gospel music at the East Lynn Park in East Lynn, Illinois. Again, the concert starts at 6 p.m. tonight. Let me also pass on a prayer request from Jason Schiffo. If you followed some of his or Tasha's Facebook posts, you'll know he's still in the midst of a kidney stone, back pain, and then because of this broken tooth and an infection that took place, he had some blurred vision, hearing loss. He was in the hospital with three different doctors yesterday trying to figure out what's going on. He's on the mend, but could certainly use your prayers as they try to figure out. He has this like rare disorder, and they're trying to get him back to health. So please pray up Pastor Jason Schiffo, and therefore he gets the day off, and we pray for a speedy recovery. Well, as mentioned, we're going to be talking about Beyond Duty to Delight, the parable of the unworthy servants. And to set up that reading, here's a song by Matthew Ward titled, This Is My Offering.
This is something I can do as a gift of love to you. Out of my heart I cry, oh Lord, I cry to you. This is something I can give, more than praises from my lips. I give my heart, oh Lord, I lift my life to you. But all I have to offer is what you've given me. For all you've done and all you mean to me, this is my offering, more than the praise I bring.
Matthew Ward, This Is My Offering, a great song to set up this unusual parable. Some refer to it as the parable of the unworthy servants out of Luke chapter 17. And I opened up the program reading verses 5 through 10. And so for the next 10 or so minutes, the remainder of this morning's program, I'll be reading an excerpt, chapter 16, out of Autobiography of God, God Revealed in the Parables of Jesus by Lloyd John Ogilvie. This is probably one of my top 10 favorite books of all time. And I love how Lloyd Ogilvie has taken so many of these parables and pointed out how it conveys aspects of God. All right, here's the reading. Stay with me, because I trust you're going to be blessed, encouraged, informed, maybe challenged, and quite possibly will never look at this parable the same again. I was called to the hospital late in the night. A highly respected member of my congregation was in serious condition. He was suffering from a terminal disease and was not expected to live. His outstanding career in the business world had distinguished him, and his contributions in the church and community had made him a very highly respected person. He had been a tireless worker in Christian causes, a tither of his sizable income, and an admired example of Christian character. When I arrived on the floor of the hospital, I found his room was next to an infamous criminal. There were policemen outside the door. Inquiry revealed that the prisoner had been shot in an exchange of gunfire at the time of his arrest for robbery. A patrolman had been killed in the line of duty by him. The prisoner had a bullet lodged in his chest. The prognosis was that he would live to stand trial. When I learned his name, I identified him as a person whose irresponsible life had been marked by a long life of petty thievery, rape, and imprisonments. My friend and the prisoner couldn't have been more different. One was a contributor to society, the other a leech. My parishioner had made his mark for upbuilding the community. The criminal had become a blight on everything good and creative. Why was one who had paid his dues to society's improvement dying, and one who had wasted his life going to live? I sat in the waiting room with my member's wife. She was asking the same question. I waited with her through the excruciating vigil of anxiety. All that could be said to her had been communicated. I tried to give comfort and courage. The pain of uncertainty about her husband's prognosis and the nerve-jangling anxiety stretched into the dawn hours of a new day. Exhausted and frustrated, finally released her to say what she was thinking and I was feeling. I noted her wringing her hands. Her eyes dilated to pinpoint precision. She swung around in her chair and met me eyeball to eyeball. Her voice was staccato and piercing. "Listen, Pastor, you better talk to God. There are two people on this floor in serious condition. One is going to live and the other die. It's not fair. That criminal has no right to live and my husband has. You should tell God that my husband has a break coming. He spent his life working for God. He has given himself doing good for years. He deserves a break. God owes him a big fat miracle, and I expect you to tell him so. If that criminal lives and my husband dies, it will prove there's no justice or reward in this life. My response was to tell her about God's love and to comfort her in her grief. I reminded her that her husband had not done good to build up a reserve of preferential treatment. The Lord was not finished with either of the critical patients on that floor. He would deal with both in his own way. Death would not be an ending for her husband. Comparisons were irrelevant. Each of us passes through the narrow door of God's judgment individually. But God would not pull off an impossibility for one because he was good and condemn another because he was bad. He wanted both to live forever. The long drive home from the hospital as the sun began to rise gave me time to reflect on what the woman had said. She spoke out of duress, but beneath her expression of seeming injustice of it all was a firmly held presupposition. She believed life was a balanced scale. Her husband had done his part loading his side of the scale. Now it was God's turn. Or was it? Her words tumbled about in my mind. They sparked other memories of familiar statements about the system of rewards by which so many people live. I heard the often repeated sentiments, "What did I do to deserve this? After all I've done for God and people, why did this happen to me?" The same confused convictions pervade our relationships. I give and give, and nobody seems to appreciate my efforts. I give my wife all she wants, and she never considers what I need. Nobody seems to recognize my efforts, my kids, my fellow workers, my friends at church. What's the use? Who cares that I do what's right and give myself and my resources to make this a better world? Sound familiar? Ever feel that way? Who hasn't? We expect rewards. It's built into our system of give and take. Life has its duties, relationships, their obligations, and work its responsibilities. But what should we expect in return? Most of us love to be loved, give to receive, work to be praised, and paid handsomely. It's part of our ethic. Whole schools of psychology have been built around the idea that personality is shaped by strokes and patterned by pats on the back. B.F. Skinner has shown us the power of reinforcement, or lack of it, for behavior modification. Eric Byrne has exposed the games people play and revealed the power of strengthening strokes. We all know about the enabling initiative of affirmation to encourage people in a pattern of behavior which is in keeping with what we want from them. Our childhood training has ingrained the "I'll love you if" syndrome in our psyches. We project that to God. Our belief is that we can store up spiritual savings account to draw on when life levels its blow. We think our goodness conditions his grace in our crisis. The distressed wife in the waiting room articulated our prejudice more than we want to admit. The parable of the unworthy servant stands in bold contradiction. Jesus believed in and practiced the power of affirmation. He gave people a liberating image of who they were because of God's love, but he did not teach a system of bartered goodness and rewards. Luke 17:5-10 is shocking. It attacks our motivation and cuts into our value system. Our ways of relating to God and each other are contradicted. Look carefully. He meant what he said. The context brightens the image. The disciples had finally come to grips with the cost of following Jesus. No wonder they exclaimed, "Increase our faith." Verse 5. The Lord told them a parable about the quality, not the quantity, of the faith they asked for. If you had faith like a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. Verse 6. Limitless power was available to them, but how should it be used and for what purpose? An intimate relationship with God alone could direct the dynamic. Absolute obedience to Him would be required. Most of all, their use of their faith in their performance of deeds of mercy would not earn a status with God. He could not love them more than He did already. They needed to be sure of that. The parable of the unworthy servants told them a great deal about God and more about their self-justifying efforts than they may have wanted to face. They could never be proud or self-satisfied, whatever they did for God in their expression of their newly found powers. There would be no place for an "I got a right to desire a blessing for my use of faith" idea of entitled preference. The parable of the mustard seed potential for their ministry opened them up for the penetrating, larger truth of Jesus' next parable, which is our focus in this chapter. They were excited by what was offered them. Now they had to learn how to offer themselves to God to use the power humbly and creatively. It gave them no rights, but a lot of responsibility. We are as disturbed by the story as the disciples must have been. By which of you, having a servant plowing or tending sheep, will say to him when he has come in from the fields, "Come immediately and sit down to eat"? Absurd! No servant expected that. Work from dawn to dark did not earn an appreciation banquet. It was a servant's obligation to work for the master. His work was not finished after the day's labor. The master's meal was to be prepared. Only after the master had eaten and drunk could the servant expect to be replenished by nourishment. The disciples knew that. Why this parabolic illustration? Jesus baited the query. He was about to hook his followers with a startling truth. I know we're going a little over today on the Friday edition of Mark and Friends, but this is such an exciting chapter in this book, Autobiography of God by Lord John Ogilvie, God Revealed in the Parables of Jesus, that I want to share a little more. And I hope the next time you're in Luke chapter 17, reading verses 5 through 10, you might look at it quite differently. But will he, the master, not say to him, the servant, "Prepare something for me to eat, and properly clothe yourselves, and serve me until I have eaten and drank, and afterwards you may eat and drink"? He does not thank the slave because he did the things which were commanded, does he? The disciples and our response is, "Of course not. But Jesus, what's the point of all this?" He's not reluctant to tell us. So you too, when you do all these things which are commanded you, say, "We are unworthy servants. We have done only that which we ought to have done." Well, that's a twist. After we have done our duty, we have no right to expect a reward? The King James Version is even more direct. "We are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. We are indignant. Is there no compensation for doing our duty?" A prayerful exposition reveals two answers. One follows the other, like day the dawn. The first is this: God owns us. He does not owe us anything. He's not accustomed to sending thank you notes for our efforts. Thankfulness is a human response, not a divine expression. He's not thankful for us or our faithfulness. We cannot manipulate His blessings by our beneficence. That's hard for us to accept. The whole fiber of our life is woven by the back-and-forth movement of the shuttle of our words and expected rewards from God. We think that He will love us if we are good, bless us if we are effective, care for us if we are efficient. We barter for His acceptance. We promise to stop some habit if He will give us what we want. We will do a loving and forgiving thing to be sure we can count on His approval. Our prayers are a negotiation for the best deal we can get. Giving money is to be assured of financial success. Acts of mercy are to ensure that we will be given His mercy. But God owes us nothing, whatever we do for Him. After all we've done, we still must say, "We are unworthy servants. We did only what was our duty." The piercing point in this, the thing we do for rewards, we should do because it's our duty. That's not a popular word in our time. We hear it a lot about freedom and grace these days. What we do does not earn salvation, we are told. True. But the result is that many of us do very little. And because I'm out of time, let me skip forward a few paragraphs and close out. And I hope that maybe you'll purchase this book sometime. It's such a good one. Lloyd John Ogilvie's Autobiography of God, God Revealed in the Parables of Jesus. But let me close out the program with a little more reading. So much that is needed in our society as part of basic Christianity. We should not need special motivation for honesty, integrity, righteousness, and justice. That ought to be as normal as breathing, eating, and sleeping. Expressing love and forgiveness should not be a big thing. It's basic Christianity. Feeding the hungry and caring for the poor doesn't warrant a brass band recognition. Allowing the plumb line of Christ's message to fall on our decisions and policies in business is normal Christian living. Why are we so excited when some Christ-oriented, biblically guided Christian does a costly act of obedience? Big deal. After we've done what's required, we still must say, "We are unworthy servants. We only did what was our duty." Oh, there's so much more to say and share. But dear one, God loves you. He owns you. Yes, He desires that you give back to Him, but it won't earn any more love. He loves you with an extravagant love that can't be earned. It's in His nature to love and care for you and provide for you. And it's our opportunity, our act of worship, to give back to Him. Gotta go, but I hope you're blessed by this message and the fact that we get to be worthy servants of His, giving back what He's really actually given us. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day, night, and weekend.